bright screens, we trace the lines of chance. A thousand tiny switches.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
It's great to be here.
So have you ever wondered what really happens when our heart is building its own plumbing before we are even born?
It is honestly one of the most incredible feats of engineering in nature.
Right. I mean, you are just a tiny cluster of cells in the womb, and suddenly you need a pump to circulate nutrients.
Yeah, and that pump, the developing heart, is a greedy muscle. It needs a massive amount of energy.
Exactly. It needs its own dedicated, uninterrupted fuel line just to keep working. But here is a really surprising fact.
Oh, here we go.
While we generally think of human anatomy as being highly standardized, you know, two lungs, one stomach, veins and arteries, exactly where you'd expect them.
Right, the standard textbook layout.
Yeah, exactly. But the tiny pipes feeding the heart muscle itself have a secret. For about 20% of you listening right now, your heart is wired completely differently than the rest of the population.
It is a massive structural difference, and it's just hiding in plain sight.
Which is wild.
It really is. Most people go their entire lives without ever knowing their heart's vasculature is essentially an architectural outlier.
Because we only tend to notice these vessels when something goes wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like a blockage that leads to a heart attack.
Exactly. That's usually when the differences come to light.
So the big question we are tackling in this deep dive is this. How could understanding the natural variation in our blood vessels change the way we treat heart disease later in life?
Right, because this hidden diversity in our biology could actually hold the blueprint for healing a broken heart.
Which is just a huge concept. Today, we celebrate the work of the research teams at Stanford University, the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System, the University of Pennsylvania, and UC San Diego, who have advanced our understanding of coronary artery development and genetics.
Yeah, and we are focusing specifically on their findings that were published in April 2025 in the journal Cell.
Which is a heavy hitter journal.
Oh, absolutely. Cell is generally reserved for studies that fundamentally change our understanding of cellular mechanisms. And this paper absolutely delivers on that front.
So let's start by establishing the basics of the heart's plumbing so everyone has a clear mental picture.
Good idea. So the heart beats around 100,000 times a day, every single day.
That is just an exhausting amount of mechanical output.
It is. And to maintain that, the muscle tissue needs constant oxygen. If that oxygen supply is cut off, even briefly, part of the heart muscle begins to die.
Right, which is what a heart attack is.
Exactly. So to deliver that oxygen, the vast majority of humans share a standard topological pattern.
A standard plumbing layout.
Yeah. The plumbing system originates at the base of the aorta, which is the massive main vessel carrying oxygen-rich blood away from the heart to the rest of the body.
Right at the exit doors, basically.
Exactly. Right at those exit doors, you have two main branches that tap into that fresh blood supply. You have the left main coronary artery, or LCA.
Okay, the LCA.
And the right coronary artery, the RCA.
Got it. So the LCA branches out to provide blood flow to the front and the lateral walls of the left ventricle, right, which is the main pumping chamber.
That's right. Meanwhile, the RCA emerges from the right side and wraps around the right ventricle, heading toward the back of the heart.
So this origin point and the path for the front and sides of the heart, that's standard across the board for everyone.
It is. But the clinical wildcard we are exploring today involves a very specific vessel called the posterior descending artery, or PDA.
The PDA. Why is that one so important?
Well, the PDA is critical because it provides blood to the inferior or posterior wall of the left ventricle. So essentially the entire back wall of the heart.
Okay.
And which main artery, the left or the right, gives rise to this PDA determines what cardiologists call your coronary dominance.
Let's break down the statistics on this anatomical variation, because this is where the 20% comes in, right?
Exactly.
In about 80% of humans, this PDA branches off from the right side. That makes those individuals right dominant.
Right, the vast majority.
But in 10% of the population, it comes from the left side, making them left dominant. And in the final 10%, it actually comes from both sides.
Which is called co-dominant, yeah.
Think about it exactly like having a house. 80% of the time, the front yard water hose is long enough to wrap all the way around the house to comfortably water the backyard.
That's a great way to picture it.
But for 20% of the population, either the hose wraps around from the completely opposite side of the house, or you need two separate hoses to get the job done.
Right, and the end result is functionally similar. I mean, the backyard gets watered, the back of the heart gets oxygen.
But the physical layout of the hoses is fundamentally different.
Exactly. And this matters clinically because if you have a blockage in a left dominant heart, a much larger proportion of the heart muscle is at risk from a single failure point.
Compared to a right dominant heart, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. The stakes are distributed differently.
Okay, so we know this variation exists in 20% of us, but the body doesn't just, you know, randomly throw hoses around in the dark.
No, definitely not.
There has to be a master architect telling these blood vessels where to grow. And to find that architect, the researchers needed an unbelievable amount of data.
They did. And they found that data by conducting a genome-wide association study, or GWS, leveraging the Million Veteran Program.
The MVP. That's a huge data set.
Incredibly powerful. They analyzed the genomes of over 61,000 U.S. veterans from diverse ancestries.
And these weren't just standard checkups, right?
Yeah.
These veterans had invasive coronary angiograms to physically map their heart's plumbing.
Yes. And it is important to note that an angiogram isn't just a basic x-ray.
Right, it's pretty involved.
It's an invasive procedure where cardiologists thread a catheter up to the heart and inject a radio-opaque contrast dye directly into the coronary arteries.
So they weren't just relying on secondary markers or, like, educated guesses.
Not at all. They had absolute visual proof on film of the heart's plumbing for every single one of those 61,000 individuals.
Mapping exactly whether they were right, left, or codominant.
Exactly. And by comparing those definitive angiogram results with the genetic data, they could scan across millions of genetic markers.
Looking for what, exactly?
They were looking for tiny variations in the DNA that consistently correlated with how the arteries were physically laid out in the chest.
Okay, I have to stop you there. Looking at the genetics of adult veterans is amazing, but how do they trace this back to when the plumbing was actually built in the womb?
That is the big question, right? Because DNA is essentially just a recipe book.
Yeah, it tells you the ingredients, but not when the meal was cooked.
Exactly. And that transition from adult genetics to fetal development is where the methodology of this study just really shines.
How so?
Well, finding genetic associations in adults only tells you which genes are involved. To prove how those genes actually build the physical structure of the heart, they had to look at fetal tissue.
During the exact window of development when these arteries are forming, I'm guessing.
Yes. They utilized human fetal heart spatial transcriptomics, specifically a technique called MRFISH at gestational week 13.
Gestational week 13. Wow. And I want to spend a second on spatial transcriptomics, specifically that MRFISH technique.
Go for it.
If a traditional genetic study is like looking at a phone book to see who lives in a city, MRFISH is like having a live GPS tracker showing you exactly which house a person is in.
And what room they are standing in.
Right, within the three-dimensional space of the developing heart.
That is the perfect distinction. MRFISH stands for Multiplexed Error Robust Fluorescence In Situ Hybridization.
Which is definitely why we just call it MRFISH.
Absolutely. It allows researchers to use fluorescent probes to light up specific RNA molecules so they can look at a slice of fetal heart tissue and visually see exactly where specific genes are being turned on.
Mapping it directly to the physical geography of the heart surface.
Yes, and they combine that 3D spatial map with single cell RNA sequencing.
Okay, so if MRFISH gives us the GPS coordinates of where the genes are active, single cell RNA sequencing is like reading the individual male inside each of those microscopic houses.
That's a brilliant way to put it.
Just to see exactly what those specific cells are doing and what their specific identity is.
Exactly. And to top it all off, they engineered specialized mouse models to physically watch these coronary arteries develop in real time.
Giving them a living system to actually test their hypotheses.
Yes. It is a brilliant synthesis of big data from 61,000 adults paired with microscopic single-cell developmental biology.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have the adult veteran genetic data, we have the fetal spatial mapping, we have the living mouse models. Who is the architect? What is actually driving this variation?
Well, the team identified 10 specific genetic loci distinct regions in our DNA that are strongly tied to coronary dominance.
10 regions. Okay.
But the most glaring billboard in the DNA, the absolute strongest signal, was found near a gene called CXCL12.
CXCL12.
Yeah. And what is particularly robust about this finding is that this specific signal was the strongest across both European and African ancestry groups in the study.
So CXCL12. Let's dig into the biology of what this gene actually does in a developing fetus.
So CXCL12 produces a protein that acts as a chemical magnet. In developmental biology, we call it a chemoattractant.
A chemical magnet, I like that.
During the first trimester, certain cells in the developing heart, specifically in the epicardium and the myocardium, secrete this CXCL12 protein.
The epicardium is the outer wrapper and the myocardium is the pumping muscle.
Exactly. Meanwhile, the pre-artery endothelial cells, the specialized flat cells that will eventually tile the inside of the blood vessels, carry a specific receptor on their surface.
To detect the magnet.
Right, a receptor called CXCR4.
So it's a biological lock and key mechanism, or better yet, a homing beacon and a ship.
I love that analogy. The muscle cells secreting CXCL12 are sending out a chemical breadcrumb trail saying, build the artery over here.
And the endothelial cells with the CXCR4 receptor migrate toward that increasing concentration of the signal.
Yes, physically extending the blood vessels across the surface of the beating fetal heart. It is a beautifully coordinated migration.
The blood vessels literally pull themselves along the chemical gradient laid down by the heart muscle. That is fascinating.
It really is. The cells building the pipes are entirely dependent on a chemical breadcrumb trail left by the tissue that needs the blood.
But wait, I recognize the name of that gene. CXCL12 is famous in cardiology for being linked to coronary artery disease later in life.
It is, yeah.
Does this mean the gene is broken in people with left dominance?
The researchers are very careful to clarify this point. The gene itself is not broken.
It's not.
No. If the coding region of the CXCL12 gene were completely non-functional, the cardiovascular system simply wouldn't develop properly. The fetus likely wouldn't survive.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what's actually happening?
The genetic variants they found are located in the non-coding regions of the DNA, specifically in regulatory elements called enhancers or promoters.
So these variants act more like a dimmer switch on a light fixture.
Yes.
They don't shatter the light bulb. They just turn the dial down on the wall.
Precisely. These genetic variants subtly change how regulatory proteins bind to the DNA near the CXCL12 gene.
Which slightly reduces the expression of the gene.
Right, resulting in less of the chemical magnet being produced. In genetics, we refer to this as haploinsufficiency.
Meaning you have enough of the protein to survive and build a functional heart, but the homing beacon is just a little bit dimmer.
Exactly. And to prove this dimmer switch theory, the researchers turned to those engineered mice we talked about earlier.
Right, living models. What did they do?
They did something incredibly specific here. They didn't just knock out the gene entirely. They engineered a specialized strain of mice called heterozygous CSIS12Ds-red+ mice.
To have exactly a 50% reduction in expression.
Yes. They swapped out one of the two copies of the gene for a red fluorescent tag.
Oh, clever. So they could literally watch it.
Exactly. This allowed them to visually track the cells under a microscope while perfectly mimicking the dimmed signal seen in humans.
And just to clarify, mice have a similar anatomical variation to humans, right?
Yeah, they do. But it involves the septal artery instead of the posterior descending artery.
Okay. And what actually happened to the physical plumbing when they dimmed the lights on the mouse heart?
The entire vascular layout shifted. When the chemical signal was reduced by half, the mice's septal artery dominance fundamentally changed.
Wait, really? Just from dimming the signal?
Just from dimming it, they observed significantly less right dominance and a massive increase in codominance. The anatomy literally rewired itself simply because the chemical magnet wasn't pulling as strongly.
So what does this all mean? We have a dimmer switch on a homing beacon that dictates where the blood vessels grow in a fetus.
Right.
And it somehow dictates if you are part of the 20% of people with differently wired hearts. How does this dimmer switch translate to the physical layout of the left versus right arteries?
It comes down to what the study proposes as the compensation theory.
The compensation theory. Okay, walk me through that.
It is an incredibly elegant explanation of the physical constraints of fetal development. Normally, in the 80% of people who are right dominant, the strong, bright CXCL12 signal rapidly pulls the right coronary artery all the way around to the back of the heart.
The right artery wins the race to supply the backyard.
Exactly. But if your genetic variants dim that CXCL12 signal, the right artery's growth is delayed. It is sluggish.
Because it doesn't get that strong, urgent pull.
Right. But the developing heart tissue is expanding rapidly and desperately needs oxygen.
So nature abhors a vacuum.
Basically, yeah. The left artery, which is already growing and extending nearby, simply steps in to fill the void.
It continues to extend, overcompensating for the right artery's delay.
Yes, eventually covering the back of the heart and making you left dominant.
It is like the left hose just keeps unspooling because the right hose got stuck in the mud. That makes perfect mechanical sense.
It really does when you picture it that way.
But let's bring this back to the listener. Understanding fetal plumbing is an amazing piece of trivia, but why is this considered a massive breakthrough for clinical practice?
Because by uncovering that CXCL12 is the exact chemical language the body uses to tell coronary arteries to grow and extend, doctors are looking at a future involving medical revascularization.
Medical revascularization. That is a huge paradigm shift.
It is. Right now, if an adult has a heart attack because an artery is blocked, we treat it mechanically.
We go in and inflate a balloon to put in a metal stent, or we do a highly invasive physical bypass surgery.
Right, literally harvesting a vein from the patient's leg, cracking their chest open, and sewing the vein onto the heart to route blood around the blockage.
But if we know the chemical language the heart uses to build original arteries in the womb, we might be able to speak that language again.
Exactly. If an adult patient suffers a heart attack, the ultimate goal would be to inject CXCL12 directly into the damaged, oxygen-starved area.
The hope is to coax the adult heart into waking up those dormant fetal pathways.
Yes, and naturally growing brand new biological bypass arteries, what we call collaterals, to route blood around the dead zone.
Okay, wait, I have to push back on that a little bit.
Sure.
Angiogenesis, the rapid growth of new blood vessels, is also a major hallmark of cancer.
It is, yeah.
Tumors hijack these exact same pathways to feed themselves. So if we just start injecting a powerful growth signal like CXCL12 into an adult human chest, isn't there a massive risk of growing blood vessels in the wrong places or inadvertently fueling a microtumor?
That is a very real critical concern, and it is exactly why this cannot just be a systemic pill you swallow. The therapeutic application of this requires extreme precision.
So how do they manage that risk?
In preclinical models, researchers aren't just flooding the bloodstream with CXCL12. They are developing localized delivery systems like specialized hydrogels or nanoparticles.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, these systems release the protein only in the ischemic boundary zone, which is the specific area of the heart muscle that is starving for oxygen.
So it has to be highly controlled.
Highly controlled. But the fact that this genetic study proves this exact pathway dictates human artery growth natively gives researchers huge confidence that a targeted therapeutic approach could work.
We are basically talking about teaching an old heart new tricks, using its original embryonic blueprints.
That is exactly what it is.
But, as with all cutting-edge science, we have to talk about the boundaries of what we know right now. What are the limitations of this specific study?
The researchers are actually very transparent about the demographic limitations of the Million Veteran Program dataset.
The MVP.
Yeah. Because of the historical male-dominated makeup of the U.S. military, the dataset used for this analysis was heavily skewed. Only 3.7% of the participants in this specific GWA were female.
Wow. That is an incredibly tiny fraction for a study about universal human anatomy.
It is a significant blind spot. Additionally, the dataset lacked large representative numbers of Asian participants.
So we are missing huge chunks of the global population in this specific dataset.
Right. Now, we do know from other anatomical studies that coronary dominance ratios are generally similar across biological sexes.
Okay, that's reassuring.
And the lead genetic variants near CXCL12 are common across global populations. However, rigorous science demands replication.
So what's the next step?
The necessary next step is taking these findings and testing them in more diverse global biobanks. We have to ensure this mechanism holds completely true for everyone, regardless of ancestry or sex.
Right, absolutely. The natural variation in human coronary artery anatomy is not just random chance. It is specifically patterned by genetics and developmental signals like CXCL12. By uncovering how the heart builds its blood supply in the womb, scientists are unlocking powerful new blueprints to repair damaged hearts later in life. What does this mean for the future of heart attack treatments? And could we one day coax our own bodies into growing new arteries on demand?
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? If our blood vessels are just waiting for these hidden chemical magnets to guide them, what other critical systems in our adult bodies are just sitting there waiting for us to rediscover the forgotten fetal password to repair themselves?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
on bright screens, we trace the lines of chance. A thousand tiny switches in the dark. Before first breath, a silent river dance that writes the map where every pathway sparks. Open chrome, made in light doors in the night. Non-code and whispers turning genes to light. A signal calling cells to find their place, so every turn can shape the whole race. Set them free, guide the CXCR4 hearts to beat.